Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. My guest today is Karen Hudes, or Hudes, or I think I forget what it is, but she's not here just yet. She's on her way home from seeing her parents, I believe, and will be on Skype soon enough. In the meantime, a little bit of New Zealand news for you. John Banks is a person that I hate a lot. And not for petty reasons that he's just not nice to me or anything like that. It's more because he's really, really corrupt and, like, evil and is really rude to everybody, basically, unless you're willing to... I hate FCC regulations. I was going to make some kind of disgusting sexual reference. But, yeah, he's a really, really nasty, unhappy character. And at the moment, he's under private prosecution in the New Zealand courts because he is allegedly guilty of electoral fraud. Now, electoral fraud, for those of you who are not, you know, up to it, is a very serious crime. Like, if you take a shockingly large amount of money that's donated to you by somebody like, I don't know, Kim.com, for example, and you don't declare that that money was given to you as a campaign contribution from somebody, that's illegal. So naturally, because he's part of the criminal cabal that runs this country, he just decided to take it and not declare it. And now he might be facing the consequences. And this is a really heartening to me, because it proves that you can indeed individually wind up getting justice. I mean, think about this. We've got Graham McCready, who is leading this private prosecution against the Honourable John Banks. And he is going to... I'm told that I'm breaking up somewhat here. If we give me a second, I'll see if I can just adjust this right now, because there's a whole bunch of things uploading and what have you, and it'll break up my signal, something chronic. So I'm just going to pause all of these little uploads here, and hopefully that should clear up the signal somewhat. Okay, now. I'm not sure if people can hear me very well here, but you know, I'm getting to it, man. Just you know, just be patient. I really don't like John Banks. I go so far as to, you know, how some people say, "Oh, well, hate is such a strong word for John Banks." I think it's a very appropriate word. You know, I mean, the term scumbaggery was practically made for him. And people like him. He's just really, really just a bad dude. And so naturally, because he's a bad dude, he winds up getting himself into really, really lucrative positions of power, like being the mayor of Auckland, for example, or the leader of the opposition party, for example. He's one of the linchpins that allows the government to get away with perpetrating copious quantities of scumbaggery. All right, there's the thing right there, because if John Banks goes down and the government is now no longer capable of counting on their coalition partner, which basically okays and rubber stamps everything that they pass through under urgency, they might not be able to continue doing so. You know, you strike at the weakest target. I mean, if you're a lion and you want to, you know, gobble up yourself a nice, tasty gazelle burger, you go for the weakest little gazelle, you know? And that's what John Banks is now. We are the lions. We're roaring. And we're going to devour him. Because he's just that delicious to rip apart the rib cage and whatnot. Now, I think that although I'm very happy about this, and I get some kind of a sick fascination by seeing scumbaggery get exposed. I'm also very tentative in thinking about, how effective is this actually going to be? I mean, really, really. You have a look at the New Zealand court system, as Vince Seymour from KiwisFirst.co.nz has exposed, that a lot of the judges are related, and there's no court of record. Like, you're not allowed to keep records in a courtroom. Well, not most of the time it doesn't happen. And even if it does happen and you find out that the judge is being corrupt, or the or there's some form of scumbaggery going down inside the courtroom, suddenly those records just magically disappear. You know, because the corruption in this country is total. All right, total. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. All right. We may as well be ruled by Robert Mugabe. That's how corrupt this country of New Zealand is. And people don't understand that, because when they walk down the street and they get busted by cops and you can't just bribe the cops or whatever, they think that, oh, well, suddenly, you know, there's no corruption of any kind. It's not like in Bali where you get caught with 50 grams of weed or something like that and you just give the police officer a big wad of cash and he just looks the other way. Doesn't happen like that here in New Zealand. It's not that kind of corruption. It's high-level corruption, okay? Top-down corruption. There's some very, 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 very intricate stories that have been coming out from all sorts of people that, more or less, if you're a high-powered politician in this country, the likelihood that you're not taking backhanders or facilitating some kind of corrupt New World Order agenda is pretty slim, Jim. All right, pretty slim. And even if you are a good politician who tends to be honest, there'll be lots of things that you won't want to talk about, right? Because they're the truth, right? And if you're a politician, telling the truth is like smacking yourself in the head with a ball peen hammer. It's suicide, you know? Have you noticed that? How sad that situation is, that telling the truth in politics is akin to political suicide. All right? That's the unfortunate business that we wind up having to accept at this particular juncture in time, because of the fact the whole system's corrupt. Right? You have this very, very massive apparatus in Parliament that is set up specifically so that if any good apples get in there, the bad barrel corrupts them. All right? You have a look at the protocols, training, and what have you for new politicians. And there's all this red tape. So even if you were a good person getting into Parliament, the red tape prevents you from doing the right things, because you're not allowed to. You're just physically not allowed to do the right thing. That's Parliament in New Zealand anyway. And I'm not entirely convinced that it's any different in any of the other first world nations around the world. You know, you get elected, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do this. But it's like being class president. You don't actually have any power. The bankers control everything. Everything. You know, with their all-seeing eyes and their big pyramids and what have you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you try. It just doesn't work. And people tell me that, here's a good idea. Let's give the government a submission. Submission? As far as I know, submission doesn't connote strength. It connotes giving up. I think that's why they call them submissions. You know, we're the government, and we're about to pass this law which nobody likes. We're prepared to take your submissions. Well, of course you're prepared to take our submission, because it means you can just continue to pass the law and give people the illusion that they actually contributed. I've been to heaps of these submission hearings, and almost every single submitter is talking about something that's very relevant, very scary, and exposing scumbaggery. And so naturally, the panel just goes, okay, thank you very much for your submission, and completely ignore it. I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, you can't get over just how corrupt this country is. When you actually look. Now, that's the only reason that anybody I could conceive of would think that this country isn't corrupt, is if they haven't actually looked. It's everywhere you point your eyes. Everywhere. The police, the very, very first arm of enforcement, you try telling them that John Banks is a criminal and ask them to arrest him and privately prosecute him. I've seen the documents. I've seen the letters. No, we're not going to do that. But why not? There was these other guys that were part of a finance company which John Banks signed off on, false financial reports, which wound up losing tens of millions of dollars for their investors. And you arrested the guy and charged him and jailed him, named Peter Hulich, who was one of the three signatories. Because the other two signatories were John Banks, who was, like, at the time virtually the mayor of Auckland and the leader of a major political party, and Don Brash, who's a former governor of the Reserve Rothschild Bank of New Zealand, and was at one point the leader of the National Party, where at the time it was the opposition. Okay, so those two corrupt politicians can sign off a false waiver and let the fall guy take all the blame. That is how this country works. That's how it works. It works beautifully. It's undeniable. It's very effective. And my goodness, is it difficult to get anybody in this country to even sit up and take notice of it. It's actually quite depressing, you know? The mainstream media will cover it to a degree, gloss over it, as they do, and never let any of the proper details come out. It's just not what they do. That's why I get really depressed when you think about the media in this country. Oh, God. Because you can't have massive corruption in the high places and have an honest media in the same sentence. You know, it just doesn't happen. Because the corrupt media cover up for the corrupt politicians. All right? It's a perfect circle. They got no responsibility to journalism. I've never even been trained in journalism, and I've still got more responsibility to it than they do. Just sick of it, man. They really do need to get their Shiite Muslim together. But something tells me that they won't, unless they're absolutely forced to. You know, this is another element, is that you should be telling your government what to do every day. All right, not the other way around. Not the other way around at all. At all. The authority that they presume to have over all of us is merely a fake facade backed up by violence. That's the reason why that fake facade carries on for so long, is because people don't like having violence perpetrated on them just for exposing a fake facade. As I say, it's a perfect cycle. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
We'll be right back. Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wear cops just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but I let sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vanilla Show. And I'm still waiting on my guest, Karen Hughes, there. We'll get her up in a minute.
If you play for things,
so AFR, if you're on the boards there, just keep in touch with her and connect her to the Skype whenever possible. In the meantime, also wanted to iterate and explain the reason why, in the very start of the show today, it was breaking up a little bit, is because we're uploading a whole bunch of new music to American Freedom Radio, where we're going to replace all of the songs, the intro and outro tracks to this radio broadcast, with nice, summery, happy, vibrant kind of music, because everybody in the United States is currently experiencing winter, and it's as cold as Shiite Muslims. So hopefully that'll start to warm you up as soon as we get all of those tracks plugged in to the schedule. You know, it's just my way of saying, don't worry, I know that it's cold, I know that it's dark, I know that it sucks, but there's summer somewhere, and hopefully you will be able to enjoy it somewhat. Now, we're connecting up Karen right now. Hello, Karen.
Hi.
Oh, good to have you with us. All right, well, welcome to the show. We'd like to start this off by just letting you explain a little bit about who you are and what it is you do for the audience.
Okay, so we're live?
We are indeed.
Okay. Hello, everybody. I'm called the World Bank whistleblower. I'm a lawyer and an economist, and I was inside the World Bank legal department for 21 years. And I managed to ingratiate myself with some of the powers that be. And I started, trying to get these guys to play by the rules, and they didn't like what I was doing. So I just kept doing it, and I've been doing it ever since. I don't know if how much detail you want me to go into.
Well, we have up to 2 hours, so as much detail as you think is necessary to take a layman from zero understanding to comprehension.
All right. Well, fasten your seatbelts, because we're going down a few rabbit holes. The World Bank is in the very center of the international financial system, and I kind of knew what I was getting into, because before I went to the World Bank, I had gotten to know a lawyer who had been there when the treaties to start the World Bank and its sister organization, the International Monetary Fund, were negotiated. That was in 1944. And he gave me the operation manual. And he also told me that in 1968, which is when Robert McNamara became the president of the World Bank, that the place started going to seed. And you know, I was somebody, I'm going to be dating myself by telling you all this. I'm an American. When they said love it or leave it, that was, you know, about the war in Vietnam, I didn't love it. And I was very, very insistent that this, a country that was going to do something like the war in Vietnam, was not going to be my country. So, and you know, I went shopping for a country. This was between my junior and senior year in college. I was one of the people that went to Woodstock. I was actually there at Woodstock. Anyway, so I went and I decided that I was going to leave the country. But first I went back and finished my undergraduate studies. And then I went to Holland and I studied development economics there. I ended up getting something like a PhD without a thesis. And so I could speak Dutch. And Ronnie Brockes, at that point, he was in his 80s, and, you know, I was in my 30s. And I played the cello, and he played the piano, so we would play Beethoven sonatas, and then he would tell me what it was like to be in the legal department of the World Bank. And the thing about the World Bank is, you know, everybody says, oh, the president is the most important position, but it's not. It's the lawyer's job to sit right in the middle of that whole international financial system and to keep everybody in the world on track. And the thing about the World Bank is it's it was created after, just at the very end of World War II, and one of its goals was to prevent World War III. They looked around to see every mistake that had been made, and they tried to overcome those mistakes. And people were motivated because they had seen all of the death and destruction. And so they did some things that would never be approved in this day and age. One of the things they did was, instead of having one nation, one vote, they created a board which would have the countries represented, and the biggest eight countries would each get their own director, and the rest of the countries would have to share a director. So I was there for 20 years, and the man who hired me was a lawyer from Egypt, and his job before he came to the World Bank was general counsel of OPEC. That's the oil exporting countries. So I think, you know, in retrospect, he could tell that I was somebody who was going to be playing by the rules. And he thought that was something that was very important. And so I got to know a lot of the people that were representing their country on the board. And the board tried to appoint me as the general counsel, and they didn't get their way. But in the meantime, when there was a job interview, you know, they brought in an executive search firm. And during my job interview, they said, why are we burning through so many general counsels? They were like going through them one a year. And I said, that's easy. The board is firing them because they're not doing their job. Because you're kind of like a traffic cop. If the president of the World Bank, which had been an American up until then, was not going to listen to the rest of the world, they were going to fire the lawyer and blame the lawyer whose job it was. So anyway, one of the other things about the World Bank is it's a knowledge bank. And so a political scientist named Jacek Kugler, who was the chair of Claremont University's political science department, came to the World Bank with something called a power transition model, which was actually developed in the Department of Defense. What this did was it matched political science with computer simulation. I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to turn off my phone. Let me just, I've got an answering machine. I didn't prepare for this radio broadcast. I think we agreed to it, what, like 20 minutes before we started?
About 30 minutes and you weren't even home, so don't worry, you'll be allowed certain privileges today.
thank you. I've got an answering machine, so that's just gonna manage without me. But anyway, so getting back to this model, what it showed is that if the U.S. didn't play by the rules, it was going to lose its leadership in the world. And it was also predicting that if the U.S. still didn't learn after it lost something called the Gentleman's Agreement, that was an agreement that lasted for 66 years, that the U.S. would appoint the president of the World Bank. And that fell by the boards. Right now there's a president from the U.S., Dr. Jim Kim. But the thing about it is he is not, he had to compete for his job. He was not, there were two other candidates. It wasn't like the U.S. gets to pick. And with the way he's just ignoring everybody, and, you know, this is probably the last time the U.S. is going to be allowed to appoint a president. And what's happening now is really something extremely serious. And that is that the U.S. is not only losing its leadership, but it's losing its currency. The U.S. dollar has been, you know, the international reserve currency. Well, that's not going to last much longer. We're going into something called gold backwardation, which means that the dollar is about to tank. It's about to crash. There is a very brief period of time that we have to kick out the Federal Reserve, because those people are not, I mean, they're a central bank, but they're a private group. And the people behind that group are the ones that have been responsible for untold misery through the centuries. A lot of people think it's the bankers, like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and, you know, the ones that own the too big to fail banks, like Goldman Sachs and Citibank and, you know, I'm running out of alphabet soup, Deutsche Bank, Wells Fargo. Well, it turns out those people are all one bank. And the reason I know this is because there's a very, very accurate model, again, a model that was done by three mathematicians from the Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland. And what they did was they had data on who owns the companies, the 43,000 companies whose shares are traded on the capital markets. And they found out that there's something called a super entity that goes around putting the same directors on all of the boards. It's called interlocking directors. So this group thought nobody was going to find out what they were up to. That group is doing insider trading. They're making what happened with Bernie Madoff look like nothing happened. They're rigging every single commodity that there is, including the price of gold. That's why the price of gold is kept artificially low. It really should be much, much higher. Same thing with silver. Same thing with they rigged the prices on LIBOR, and they've been caught at that. These thugs thought that they could just, you know, buy every single politician in every single country. But it didn't work. It didn't work. A couple of countries threw them out. Hungary threw out their central bankers. So did Iceland. And Costa Rica was smart enough not to have them in the first place. But I have been, luckily, people are starting to listen to me. And so their days in the United States are very, very, very numbered. I would count them on, you know, I think if they're not out in 2 weeks, I would be surprised.
They have had this massive influence for quite some time, built up over the last 100 years of the Federal Reserve System. And we, in fact, were talking about that study you're referring to, which identified the 147 companies that have come together to form a super entity that basically they own 40% of all wealth and they control 60% of all business, which means they control all business on planet Earth to a large degree. And so naturally they need some form of central power broker by which they can institute their scumbaggery over the entire world with impunity. And I think that this is part of what the World Bank and the World Trade Organization and, of course, the World Court, which are more or less only favour these particular corporate scumbags, is really all about. Is what's your analysis of that?
Yes, except when these thugs do their handiwork, they have to put a facade in place, because a lot of people don't realize what they're doing. And especially, you know, they've bought up the media, so they've been lying to people. But the thing is, we've been busy. And when I say we, who do I mean by we? I have been working with a whole network of whistleblowers and countries and good people. They call them white hats, all over the place. They've just been, we've been going from strength to strength. And people, you know, I'm starting to get through to people. It took the longest time. I didn't, you know, I was kind of clueless. I didn't know about the alternative media. So I just kept going back to the, you know, the same usual broadcasting networks. Except that since I went to law school, I know how to document. So I've got, you know, on my website, you can see the correspondence where I ended up writing the American Society of Newspaper Editors to ask them why they weren't telling the American people what was going on. And at the last presidential election, there's a presidential debate commission. they kicked out the League of Women Voters that were trying to run a clean debate to put up something that, you know, it was just all smoke and mirrors to make it look like it was a real debate, but it really wasn't. Yeah, so I documented all of that correspondence. You can see it on my website. And then because I had been given the insider track, I knew what I needed to do to hold the World Bank legally responsible. I bought a World Bank bond, and I sued not only the World Bank, but I sued the company, the auditing company that had been hired by the board. Because don't forget, I've been talking to these people. I've known them. So they you know, they're helping me with this. So the board commissioned a study. It's something called internal control over financial reporting. That means that if a lawyer who's been fired, like me, for trying to stop corruption, is prevented from talking to the audit team, which is what happened, that is against the audit standards. So I've got to all the auditors.
Karen, I'm sorry. We're coming to break now. I'm really enjoying this. We'll be right back in a little bit under 4 minutes, folks.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. My very special guest is Karen Hudes. Is it Hudes or Hudes or Hudes or what is it?
I answer to everything, but it's theoretically Hudes.
Hudes, as opposed to hubris. That's excellent. All right.
That's right.
She's like Hudes is the opposite of hubris of the World Bank. I love it. It's fantastic. You can't make this stuff up. In fact, I just did make it up. Anyway, if you could continue on explaining this this World Bank situation, I'm really quite fascinated by this. I'm really glad to have you on.
Oh, well, I'm glad to be on. I was in the middle of talking about the accountants, but you can't really talk about the accountants until you talk about Elaine Colville, who is a Scottish whistleblower. And she caught the World Bank with its hand in the till in breaking the accounting rules in her department. And, I mean, she is no shrinking violet. I have never met Elaine Colville. I can't wait until I meet her. We've been working together now for like 3 years. And she is really, really sharp. Anyway, so the two of us ended up in the very center of the auditing. You know, the auditors like to police themselves. And we ended up, I think it's called the Financial Reporting Council. And we said, how is it that KPMG and I think Deloitte was auditing, you know, the World Bank has different entities. And one of the entities is the International Finance Corporation, and that's where Deloitte was auditing. Anyway, so we dragged the auditing firms into the middle of that place, and we found out that nobody's home, that these people are not policing themselves. The brethren are letting each other off. And I also went into something called the International Organization of Supreme Audit Institutions. That's the club for all the government auditors. And these people are just sort of, you know, nobody's home. And we've just documented that nobody's home at the center of the financial system. So there's a lot of retrofitting that we're going to be doing. You better believe. We've caught them with their hands in the till. And, yeah, so actually a lot of people find it very improbable that we're still, you know, telling the tale because a lot of people that have gotten this far have ended up, you know, getting dissuaded or bought off or whatnot. But the thing about it is that what we're documenting is it's not the usual whistleblower thing. We're trying to document a cover-up. So our job is a lot easier. And lawyers are supposed to reveal this kind of cover-up. That's our job. I'm just following the rules of professional responsibility for lawyers. So at any given point, if something had come along to derail me, this was going to blow the lid off. It wasn't going to solve any problem. And there isn't any single day that I know something that I haven't told everybody. I'm a blabbermouth. So they're not going to gain anything by taking me out. And one of the things that I realized when I started to understand the magnitude of the problem, I went to a guy called Larry Garrison, who's my PR guy. And that's when they knew that, you know, there was no way that they were going to escape. If something happened to me, he was like my life insurance policy. And they started doing some pretty nasty tricks to him. That's when, you know, I came up with a formula that when I start telling, you know, the novel that's based on the story or even the real story, I don't know how we're going to do it, he gets half the profits. So he had some skin in the game to keep me, you know, going. And don't forget, we're a group of whistleblowers. So they would have had to find each and every one of us, and there isn't anything that one of us knows that the rest of us don't know. So it's not that easy, you know, to cut us off at the knees. We, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and we've gotten really pretty good at it. We've gotten pretty good at, and so the best way to think of us now is not as whistleblowers. Think of us as a sting operation, because I have been writing all of the 188 embassies. I've visited with the embassies. I've been, you know, at a certain point, and people have given me a lot of really good advice. So, you know, this UK Serious Fraud Office in 2010 called up the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the SEC stonewalled. Well, this is not acceptable. So when the UK Parliament started asking for statements, I started telling them that the SEC was stonewalling the Serious Fraud Office. I've gotten three statements up on the website of the UK Parliament. I've testified with the European Parliament, and I brought a very detailed chronology of all of this, including, you know, that the Serious Fraud Office was getting stonewalled by the SEC. And the Serious Fraud Office, the UK Parliament, they took this very detailed chronology and they sent it to the World Bank and said, do you have anything to say for yourself? So the thing has become a sting operation. And the reason I went to the European Parliament, let me step back a few steps. In 2007, the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs wrote a letter asking the audit committee to get involved. And at that point, it was chaired by the French representative, Pierre Duquesne. And Pierre Duquesne turned it into an investigation of something called the Institutional Integrity Department. Well, that department has no institutional integrity, but in any event, that group acted like a goon squad to take out any whistleblower that dared to try to tell the board what was going on. So what happened was, what's his name, that Paul Volcker came in and did a whitewash. And a number of people that were working in the Institutional Integrity Department tried to tell the Volcker panel what was happening. And those people were being, you know, fired, intimidated. It was, and they ended up getting compensated. And there's a group called Common Dreams. I don't know if you know them. They put up a lot of really good documents. One of the documents that they put up was, listen, I'm just going to tell you how things work in the United States. There's a group called the Government Accountability Project. And they like to make it seem like they're helping whistleblowers. No. What they're doing is they're every now and then making feeble attempts to help a whistleblower so they can keep their cover. They're, you know, they're there to trap any whistleblower that comes to them. They tried to ruin my case, but it didn't work. You know, I've got the serious whistleblowers know what they have with the Government Accountability Project. It's the same thing with the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU. If you've got a real serious problem, the ACLU is going to make sure that you don't get anywhere with it. So you've got all kinds of gatekeepers that are there to trap the unwary whistleblower, and we've documented all of them. We know, you know, we warn each other, we help each other get around these kinds of booby traps. ACLU is, you know, they call me up every now and then, and they ask for a contribution. I say, why would I give a contribution to a booby trap? And, you know, I knew some of the lawyers at the ACLU. I've documented all of these, you know, terrible, the people that work for these organizations should be ashamed of themselves. Anyway, so that's what our group is. We're a sting operation. And it turned out that the real corruption was not in the World Bank. The real corruption, and it's not even, you know, you can say that all of these crooked politicians on the take, that the corruption is there. No, I can tell you where the corruption is. It's not even with the bankers. I mean, yeah, they're corrupt. I'm not saying that these groups are not corrupt. But there's, you know, it was kind of like taking an elevator up. Every time you would finish documenting all of the corruption at that level, all of a sudden the elevator would go up another layer. So let me tell you what's behind the banksters. It's the Jesuits. Yeah, it's the Jesuits.
Well, what's the name? The Vatican is one of the biggest banking institutions in the world, isn't it?
That's right. So and, you know, people get very, very angry at the Rothschilds and the other families that are involved there. And I'm not trying to condone these groups. But I have to say that it is the Jesuits that are giving them the marching orders. And don't forget it. Because there's, you know, as this story is coming out, I'm looking at some very nasty videos because the Jesuits are very good at finding scapegoats. And they're, you know, they're very busy putting out their disinformation. We shouldn't make the same mistakes this time around.
Well, let's get into this after the break. The break that's coming, of course, because I think that there has been a lot of people recently coming out talking about the Jesuits and their current influence of the world, and this is met by denial and, oh, you're a religious fundamentalist or something of this nature. But the unfortunate business is you can't argue with documented evidence,
exactly,
ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly, and we've got it. Yeah.
Exactly. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please donate to the show if you like the idea of bringing on people from all over the world, whistleblowers, activists and whatnot, to share their stories with zero cost to them, preferably. Free information. I think that's a good way to override this public education nightmare, which has dumbed everybody down so they don't realize that there's a bunch of criminal bankers and Jesuits in control of the world. We'll be right back.